Welcome to Alphabet Scoop. This is episode 36. I'm your host, Stephen Hall, and I'm joined once again by Abner Lee. And yeah, we're going to have a little bit of a fun, interesting, kind of unique show. Usually we kind of pick three, newsy topics to chat about. But this week we're going to do a little bit of a year in review, I think. Kind of just talking about some major things that happened this year, the biggest news in Google, and as well as maybe like the most popular stories we've had on 9to5 Google this year. And I guess we can start off with maybe just talking about some of our favorite things that happened this year. What was your kickstart the conversation? What was your favorite Google hardware or software launch for the year?
So on the hardware front, it's definitely smart displays. Like around mid-2018, when Google, it seemed that smart displays were taking forever to launch. Google announced it in January at CES, and it was just taking months for them to launch. But at the end of the year, and the past few months especially, we finally seen them, and honestly, they're worth the wait. Google has a hit on its hands here in a way that they're first to this product, to this product category. Amazon had the show, but honestly, it doesn't seem like it's been that successful. But here, Google seems to be leading this new product category, and it's a genuinely useful product. From the photos to just having a screen, it's just really simple, really straightforward. And it's super convenient to have.
Yeah, and we still haven't seen... So last year at CES, there were three smart displays that were shown off alongside the announcement of the platform. One from Lenovo, one from JBL, and one from LG. And the LG one is still not shipping, correct?
I think we've seen it.
At least it's not in the hands of any reviewers, I don't think, right?
That is true. The one we haven't heard about is Sony. We have nothing from Sony.
Yeah, and so maybe we'll see more about that this week or this next week at CES. We'll see. But yeah, I really agree. I don't know. Thinking about how I use technology in my day-to-day life, smart displays and the Google Home have kind of caught me off guard, I guess, in the last couple of years of not expecting how significant they would be. I saw the Amazon Echo and the Echo and then the Echo Show, they both beat Google to the punch, and they beat, smart speakers, smart display categories are growing and they're being adopted more and pursued by a lot of different companies now, but Amazon kind of was the first out of the gate. And it never really triggered for me how significant these devices would be now until now. You know, I have a half a dozen of them or a dozen of them. I have lost count in my house. I think, the Echo seemed like a novelty to me. It seemed like a cool tech demo. But now, I actually never owned one until like the last year or so. I actually got one to compare with the ones that I've acquired that are Google products. I only mainly use the Google ones, but I never owned an Echo back when they were the only, player in the space, basically. And it wasn't a year or two. I can't remember, but, I underestimated them, I think. And now, kind of tying in with what you're saying, smart displays are definitely, they're a huge part of how I interact with technology, interact with the internet on a daily basis. And my favorite of them is Google Home Hub. And I think the Google Home Hub was probably Google's best product across the board, software and hardware of the year, for a lot of reasons. It's just really exciting whenever a company launches a product that's that useful, that packs that many features and comes in at a price point that literally, almost anyone can afford to get one and put one in their kitchen, especially at the prices that they've been selling them at, on sale this fall. So it's just one of those products it's kind of like the Google Home Mini, kind of like even the original Google Home, where it's like, this is a brand new product, a brand new category. And everyone is trying it out. The whole country, is testing the waters with this new kind of, platform. And that's just really cool to see. And me personally, I've benefited from it greatly, I think.
To think about it, the adoption of smart speakers is, it can't be more than 5 years old. It's smart speakers got really popular really fast in a way that it didn't happen with the smartphone. And one, it's way cheaper. And I think the uses are slightly more obvious, being able to talk to something and get answers all the time. But it's just a kind of an incredible shift in technology and the speed and pace of it.
Yeah, for sure. I think a lot of things, there's a lot of examples you can think of in this category. You know, for instance, the Apple Watch, for example, or other Android Wear smartwatches. They're a category that kind of came out of nowhere and exploded because they kind of serve as an accessory to the smartphone, which is, you know, the, you know, the centerpiece of our digital lives and has been for a decade now for those of us that jumped on board early. You know, and these devices are kind of just like a supplement to them. You know, it's like, yeah, we have a phone and yeah, it has Spotify app and yes, we can play music on it. But with the phone alone, we can't pump out really good sound. And a smart speaker, being able to tap two buttons and cast something to a Google Home, you know, it kind of serves as an extension of the smartphone in that sense. You know, the Apple Watch or smartwatches are kind of different. And there have been other things that have been kind of experimented with, such as, you know, a $350 smart jacket, you know. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of not surprising that they've blown up. And considering, you know, how ubiquitous smartphones are. But, yeah, you're right. It is a monumental shift just to see. And now that they've sold and being marketed so heavily and being sold so cheaply, I think in many ways they're starting to I don't know. We see these charts every year of like how much time per day people are spending with different kinds of technology. And we've seen how TV, traditional TV, has gone on the decline. And, you know, traditional radio has gone on the decline while smartphones have increased. And, you know, like those kind of that kind of data. I wonder how much time in terms of raw data, you know, that we're actually spending talking to smart speakers. And to see if that increases over the next couple of years and starts to steal a little bit, who knows, but, you know, steal a little bit of a mind share and time from the smartphone. Who knows?
That is a really interesting, that would be a interesting digital well-being metric to see how many hours you've talked to your smart device.
Yeah. The thing is, though, it's like, now that we've been using smartphones for 10 years, we kind of have an idea of kind of the negative effects of, with you know, thumbing through social media, or, you know, being, you know, having even the, you know, physical effects on your eyes of staring at screens all day or whatever. You know, we have that because we've all experienced it to differing degrees. We all kind of understand that the digital well-being of is a necessary component of smartphones now. But we don't know of any of the negative effects of interacting with artificial intelligence yet. So who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll see that, like, I don't know, it starts to deteriorate your human relationships if you overemphasize your relationships with AI, and you'll in 10 years we'll be wanting to limit the amount of time we spend talking to Alexa or whatever to maintain the health of our human relationships. I don't know.
The kids and them losing their manners when talking to people, that's going to be a real
sign
of descent.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, for the first, I don't know, a year maybe of having the Google Home, I would, you know, I would treat it like crap, you know, you know, my wife would kind of get upset for a couple reasons, you know, like one, like, you know, she doesn't want me practicing treating a woman like, you know, badly, you know, because these are typically female, you know, AI
personifications. Yeah,
personifications of AI. And then two, she's like, well, you know, down the line when Google Assistant or Alexa have bodily forms, they're going to get their revenge on you. So yeah, between those two things, you know, she kind of was upset with me for being so rough with them. And that's actually a really good point. I mean, to see how, you know, I think part of the reason the frustration comes from the fact that they're imperfect, you know.
Yes,
if they were,
absolutely.
If they were a human, then you would have no frustration because you could say stop the timer and it would get it would work 100% of the time. But if it works 95% of the time, which it does, the 5% is really, really frustrating and it makes you curse at the thing.
You're a cursor at technology. Oh, yeah. Viewing.
I think anyone who's owned an Alexa or a Google Home for longer than 6 months would probably be able to say the same thing. So I have no shame in admitting that I've cursed in my Google Home before.
In the past year, have you noticed Assistant getting better?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely noticeable since the launch of the Google Home a couple years ago. But I think the lately my frustration is not with understanding what I'm saying. It's recognizing the hot word. In my kitchen, I have a Google Home Hub, and then right next door, I have a next door to the kitchen and the dining room, I have a Home Max. And sometimes I'll be standing right in front of the Home Hub and say the hot word, and the Home Max across the room will hear me, and the Home Hub won't go off because it thinks I'm talking to the it just won't hear me, and it's really like random and sporadic. Like sometimes it will work perfectly and other times it just doesn't hear the hot word correctly or whatever, or sometimes the other device does and this one doesn't, or vice versa. So I don't know, it's just imperfect. And in terms of voice recognition or transcribing speech, it's definitely gotten better, that's for sure.
And it's gotten more features over this past year. That's definitely a big trend.
What's it called? Pretty Please.
Pretty Please.
Yes. That is, I like it a lot. It's as good as I expected it to be. It really encourages me to be a little bit more patient.
In terms of Assistant, I think the big trend of that this year was more of it being better fleshed out on the phone. Like the visual interface is so much better compared to at the start of the year. And I think that reflects somewhat reflects how the phone is still the center of most people's universes. But it looks so much nicer. It's so much more cohesive. This year we got Google Now back, kinda close enough. All the stuff they did for the smart displays, the visual design that went into Assistant for that, got translated over to the phone. And personally, I'm like a big typer to Assistant, so rather than speaking, I just type out all my queries. It feels like a command.
Really?
That's
fascinating to me. I don't ever use the typing feature because to me, I think it's like if I'm going to put all the work in to type everything out, then I might as well just do whatever it was I was going to do.
Yeah.
Manually.
Do a Google search.
Yeah. Do a Google search or do, you know, if I'm telling the assistant to, I don't know, play music or something, if I'm going to type it out, I might as well go in the Spotify app and pull it up manually. Yeah. To me, the whole point is to skip the manual interaction and just be able to take my thoughts via voice and just do what I wanted to do.
Oh, definitely agree. But I don't know, when I have the time, I sometimes like typing. I like command lines. I like the idea of having a command line on my phone.
Fair enough. Anyways, what's your favorite Google software product for the year? I mean, it kind of ties into this because, you know, the assistant and the OS that runs on smart, you know, the Android things and the Cast platform are definitely software, but do you have any other thoughts?
It's Google Lens, Google's visual search, visual recognition feature. After I/O, it got really, at I/O 2018, they updated it with like real-time search, smart text selection, and I found myself turning to it so much more ever since that update. My thing is just taking a picture of something and just copying the text. I've done that so many times in the past few months. It's so much more convenient than transcribing. Mm. And yeah. I think for most people, like, I think most people will still be catered towards like that shopping, like products like Google Lens. For Google, they're great for shopping and getting people to buy stuff. And I think that's like a good entry for people. But when they start seeing it as a utility in the same way that people just take pictures of everything they want to remember, I think this is going to be an interesting shift in how people interact with the camera and how it becomes a more powerful tool day to day.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me that, I mean, is the text selection the main thing that you use it for?
Yeah, and like doing lazy Google searches rather than just entering it. When I see like a restaurant sign, I just take a picture of it and have it Google do it automatically. And with the taking the smart text selection thing, it's sometimes you don't want to take a picture of everything, so it's convenient to just.
But you've managed to get it into your daily, like, instincts. You know, I feel like with phones at this point, we just have the way we use them is borderline instinctual now. We don't really think about why we're using the phone or what we're doing with it. We just use it. Has Google Lens entered that category for you yet? Or is it still thinking like manually, like thinking, oh, this will be easier if I go use Google Lens and like pull up Google, like if I, like the restaurant example, like my gut or my instinctual, you know, thing is just Googling the name of the restaurant, right? Uh-huh. Has it gotten to the point where it's instinctual for you to pull out Google Lens and look at the restaurant name? Yeah,
I think so. To me, it's a tool. Like, my mindset, this is a new tool for me to use. And I feel like during the early days of the smartphone, I also felt that being able to search stuff instantly is a new tool for me that I can use. And it's very, and with where Lens is in terms of quality and accuracy, I think it's definitely there for me anyways.
Yeah, no, I mean, sure, for sure, from a technical standpoint, it's the best of any of its competitors. There aren't really any. But, you know, it's definitely there in terms of technological capability. But for me for example, I'll just use, you know, smart or AI / you know, smart speakers or smart assistants. None of them, like, for instance, Siri, for example, I used an iPhone as my daily driver for a really long time. And Siri was like that to me. It was like a tool that I knew I could use if I wanted to. It was a cool tech demo, and it was pretty, you know, before the Google Assistant came around, it was the best, you know, version of that there was. And so it was more like, oh, I just remembered I can use Siri for this, and then I'll go out of my way, out of my normal, you know,
I see.
out of my normal, you know, flow of using my phone, thinking, oh, I can use Siri for this. Let's try that. And then I'll try Siri. And then, you know, 50% of the time it would actually work and 50% of the time it wouldn't, or whatever. You know, like looking up a restaurant phone number, for example, like what's the phone number for the nearest Domino's or whatever. Mm. You know, before the Google Assistant, It wasn't second nature to do that. It was kind of like, oh, I could do this if I want to. But with the Google Assistant, post Google Assistant, it has now become, if I'm using my Pixel or if there's a Google Home in the room, it's become second nature for those kinds of actions to not even think about it. It's just completely natural for many, many things, calling people, you know, looking up phone numbers, getting directions, you know, even recipes and stuff in the kitchen has gotten to the point where it's like almost like even without thinking, I'll just say hot word, get me a recipe for this. Playing music is definitely like, you know, it's like completely natural at this point. Mm-hmm. Is Google Lens to that point for you, you know, to where it's like you're walking down the street, you see the name of a restaurant, and without even thinking about it, you pull out your phone and, you know.
Yeah, because, like, for me, it's so much more convenient than having to type out something.
I mean, if it's there for you, then that's impressive, because I don't think for most people Google Lens is there yet.
And maybe most people know about it, frankly.
Oh yeah. I mean, sure, there's definitely a percentage of people that have never even wouldn't even know what we're talking about. But even those that would, even those that are tech savvy, I would doubt that it's gotten past novelty stage.
I would really suggest to most people who've tried it when it first launched to give it a second try, because in terms of the quality improvement, like the underlying technology, what they did at I.O. with all the real-time search stuff makes a huge difference in my experience. And I guess, well, I was using a Pixel 3. I use a Pixel 3 when I use Google Lens. In terms of like at the camera being able to capture everything, in terms of that entire workflow being optimized, for me at least, it's all there, especially in these past few weeks.
Cool. Well, I'll just keep trying. I mean, it's kind of interesting how these things work. But I, at some point, I may, get into a habit of using it for certain use cases and get to the point where I could force myself to be in, the habit of using it. But for me personally, even with the features that they announced at I/O, I don't know. I try not to force myself into using. New technology. I would like the technology to come to me, if that makes sense.
Definitely.
And the assistant did that. The assistant came to me, and I didn't have to force myself into getting into a habit of using it. It just happened. So far, it hasn't happened with Google Lens, but I'm going to keep giving it a shot. Anyways, yeah, I think that's interesting that's your number one, because to me it doesn't even. I mean, it's awesome, and it's definitely the leader of the pack. In that category, but just not something that I use at all. For me, I don't know. I have a few things for best Google software. Google Duo gets the award for not being killed. and it's just great. It's a fantastic app. Congrats to Justin Uberti and the rest of the Google Duo team for making such a fantastic video conferencing app. Even my iOS family and friends, I'm still carrying around an iPhone so that I can iMessage my family, but they all use Duo.
Google is really pushing Duo during the holidays with the ads.
Yeah, it's great. Another software thing, or best software of the year or whatever, I think Fuchsia needs a call out, because it's not, it's not out there. It's not out, it's open source. The source code is public, obviously, but it's not a public facing product, but our Kyle has done an awesome job this year of digging into the source code and dissecting it and trying his best to, decipher everything that's public, at least. With more things are getting or going public every week, and we're continually having to decipher and redecipher things. But I think Fuchsia is cool, because it's kind of kickstarted this conversation of what is post Android look like, or even if the Android brand does stick around, what is the future of Android going to be? And either way, it's really cool. It's a really cool glimpse into that, I think, and that's something
next. I think Fuchsia is really kicking off this idea of the next gen operating system cycle.
Because
there's, 10-15 year cycles for all these OSs, and I think Google is probably getting a head start on that.
Yeah, it's kind of like if Apple was developing iOS 15 in the open, And just letting people look at the source code as they go. That's kind of what's happening with Fuchsia, it seems like. So yeah, it's been cool just to watch and just to follow. If you haven't been following that, I highly recommend you check out Kyle's Fuchsia Friday series. He does a great job of really picking everything apart. What's your biggest of Google in 2018? What's your biggest disappointment / failure / worst product?
Biggest disappointment.
Okay. Yeah. What's the worst thing that Google did this year?
What is the worst thing? Well, I think they bungled YouTube Music. That they should have had a more cohesive product first edition out when it launched in after I/O. I forgot what month it came out.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Okay, I use YouTube Music every day. It's a work obligation, and I emphasize obligation a lot, but I need to use the products I might think about. But this is not the first good stab, in my opinion. It really seemed like they had, like Google was working on something bigger and they had more time leading up to the launch of it. And what actually came out and what's been happening, what, 5-6 months later, seems very rudimentary. I definitely thought they could have beat YouTube Music, they could have beat Play Music on its first stab of YouTube Music, but no, it's missing features. It's missing some basic features. There's no feature parity yet. And it is a music streaming service in that it works and that I like some of the features, but this doesn't seem like the next big thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. Here's a good litmus test for you on this. My familiarity with the new YouTube Music is limited to Kyle's review of it.
And nothing has changed since that review.
Right. Yeah. That's kind of not a good sign. I mean, obviously Google and Alphabet are a huge breadth of apps and products. And so, you know, it's hard to be completely familiar with every single corner. You kind of, if at this point, you know, you kind of have to pick and choose what you are more or less familiar with. I have not actually used YouTube Music personally, like as a consumer, even a single day.
Yeah, you're not missing much.
And that's, you know, that says a lot considering, you know, we are of all people, you know, the most likely probably to have jumped, to have moved over already of anyone. Yeah. And I've just not even touched it really. So yeah, I completely agree. It's weird. But I think that what they said was, you know, over the next year or so, it's just going to slowly pick up Google Play feed, and maybe it will,
it's a minimum viable product. I'll give them that. Like most people would be happy with it.
Right.
I think Spotify did. The expectation, Spotify has greatly risen expectations for what the streaming service is, from their very good algorithmic weekly playlists to even the social features, like seeing what your friends are playing. Like those are, at this point, basic things, which like Apple Music has, that should be an expected feature, but we're not there yet.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Let's see, other disappointments. Google Fit, they just redesigned it, and it all signs point to health being a much more bigger focus for Google going forward, which I'm sure we'll talk about in trends section later, but it's not Fitbit, it's not Garmin, it's not Apple Health, and it needs more features moving forward.
Yeah, and there's nothing supporting it, really. I mean, the hardware to really make Google Fit be great doesn't exist.
Yeah, and phone tracking is not a bad idea in terms of like everybody has their phone on them, but it could do more.
And meanwhile, the Apple Watch Series 4 can do EKGs, and I've been doing like 5 a day for the last month and have confirmed that I don't have atrial fibrillation. So that's good. It's just insane how far ahead Apple is with that stuff.
Yeah.
You could extend your frustration with Google Fit to Wear OS as a whole, which, you know, it's kind of a subject that's been harped on over and over, but it's just like, I don't know, Google needs to, I don't know, kill it. Kill it and start over or something. I don't know. It's weird. In the meantime, all these OEMs are just probably, I mean, how many Wear OS watches do you think we're going to see announced at CES? I'm going to guess 5. And they're all going to be the exact same thing. They're going to be the exact same thing with different external bodies.
Which I've been thinking a lot about Wear OS in terms of what like actual people want. You think it's enough, like the very casual person,
non-techy person? What Wear OS has become is a way for fashion brands to sell smartwatches.
Yes.
Basically. And if you're a loyalist to a fashion brand, then that seems to be like the majority of Wear OS smartwatch buyers.
Is the average person getting a good experience though when they see it land in store and think that they might want some of the features? Is what they're getting any good? Which is something I've been trying to figure out.
I don't know. I mean, it depends on what you're wanting. I mean, the Apple Watch from the very beginning was very clearly positioned as being kind of like a mix between the health. So like there have been different silos of wearables, you know, there have been like the Fitbits, which have been primarily focused on health features and nothing else. And then you have, you know, the other end of the spectrum was like the Series 0 Apple Watch Edition, which was gold and had, you know, bare minimum health features at the time and was sold for $20,000. So that was like the extreme of the, you know, fashion category. Or did you lose me? Am I still on?
No, you're still here. Okay. Your video is frozen, but your audio is still coming in.
That's weird. Well, yeah, so the Apple Watch seemed like, I don't know, kind of positioned as, you know, health device plus. And I don't know, to me, the Wear OS devices as of now, even with Google's rebirthed Google Fit kind of attempt, which they recently announced, it seems like it's just a little notification device on your wrist. Seems like that's
the
primary. I don't know.
Yeah, primary.
In this case, I don't know if people want that. I don't know. I don't.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the Wear OS hole. Which. So why is Google still? Why is Google still here? Are they still here because they have a good enough product which manufacturers want to use? And I don't see what the path forward is with Wear OS, honestly. Do they have plans to make it better, but the technology isn't there yet? Or are they on like a vaguely life support in terms of the future of Wear OS? It's very confusing to see the path forward for this product.
Yeah, I don't know, honestly. I can't figure it out. And that's why, I mean, it seems like the necessary move is for Google to refocus its effort. It just seems like there's no, like you're saying, there's no clear path. And maybe to refocus, they have to, I don't know.
But the thing about refocusing is, in terms of what they set out to do with Wear OS, with making an OS that everybody will use and turn to, mission accomplished. That's what everybody who wants to make a smartwatch is turning to. And I think they got that market pretty well down. And anything else could be a disruption to that.
Yeah, I need to think about this more. I don't really have any helpful insight on it right now. It just seems like Google's floundering. That's as simple as that. And I don't know, maybe their best move would be just to launch their own first party thing. You know, continue to support these Android Wear third party watches and then just, you know, build their own watch with proprietary software. And
Imagine that happens. Like
we get Google
Home Hub.
Yeah. For Google, it seems like that's the best move. I don't know if that's the best. Well, or at least for Google's heart. I mean, I don't know. Google's what benefit is Google really getting from all of these third-party watches running Wear OS. I mean, the obvious benefit when every single smartphone OEM is putting Android on their phone is that all of Google's apps and services and the Play Store and et cetera, are all running on all these phones. And so there's a very, very obvious benefit for Google for that. But none of that benefit exists on all these all these Wear OS watches.
A very bad experience. Nobody reinstalls apps.
Yeah, what's the benefit to Google's bottom line with the current state of Wear OS? And there's not really one. There could be a potential benefit if Google built a really good smartwatch and, you know, did their own thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's move on.
Yes.
We could talk a little bit about some of the. I guess one of the best ways to talk about this year, though, is to talk about, you know, the biggest stories for 9to5 Google as a site. So, like, you know, there were stories that may have been really, really significant, but they didn't exactly get much traffic. And then there are other stories that were obviously very, very, very popular with our readers that may not have been super significant, but apparently they were. One of the big trends we've been seeing this year is that lots of Google apps are finally doing dark mode. And we wrote about that. And that's actually kind of tied in with another bigger trend that this year was the year of the Google Material theme.
Yes.
Which has basically brought a visual aesthetic revamp to every single Google product, basically.
Yeah.
That's been a big deal. I've really enjoyed that. I've been covering Google long enough now that I was around whenever Material was hitting with Android Lollipop. And, you know, I really enjoyed that year because every app update, it was like updated to Material 3 or Material Design, app updates. You know, we started to see Material Design in the web in various places and, you know, the OS itself and third-party apps would take advantage of Material Design in whatever way. And so I really enjoyed that year. And then this year was kind of like, this past year, 2018, was kind of a repeat of that. It was just another, visual revamp year. And it's just a lot of fun to me to see all the different things kind of trickle in.
Yeah, it's really nice when you can actually use new things.
Yeah. Yeah, it's also fun just in general, I think, for me as a techie person the visual updates are like the most fun updates to me. You know, like it's for the next 3 or 4 or 5 years, however long it is before Google revamps their visual design language again, all the updates are just going to be functional updates, which, you know, those are cool, but it's just, I don't know. It's just really exciting whenever you download an app that you're really familiar with that you've been using for a really long time that. And it's just like, it's like new again, you know?
New again. Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, that was a big deal this year. We've probably written over 100 stories about various Material theme redesigns. Another one was the stuff that we talked about last week. Well, I guess not last week, a few weeks ago now, which was Hangouts being killed off and Google Allo being killed, which kind of ties in with what we were talking about. Duo. Duo was the surviving brother.
This was like one of the most popular posts on our sites this year. And it really does reflect how communicating is maybe not as locked in as entrenched yet. And that if Google did something great, maybe people would use it.
Yeah. This Hangout story, for better or worse, was one of our most popular stories. It might have been, actually, I mean, I can look at the data, but it was probably one of the biggest stories across the entire 9to5 network. It was definitely the number one on 9to5 Google, but it might have been the biggest on the 9to5 network or one of the biggest. Electrek and 9to5 Mac probably had posts or two. I'm not sure. But yeah, it was huge. Big deal. A lot of people freaked out and a lot of misleading headlines were written based on it. And I think that was part of the reason it was so big was that it was very widely misunderstood.
Mm-hmm.
Another one Another thing that happened this year was the notch with the Pixel 3 XL. That was like, I don't know. I can't remember. How many episodes did we talk about the notch?
And at the
notches in general were a huge topic this year.
And at the end of the day, they didn't do anything with the notch. Still mad. Still very mad.
Yeah, I mean, speculation. What's the point of the big notch? There isn't one. There isn't one. It's just for another camera. That's all. No Face ID alternative, which I think we'll probably see this year.
Hopefully. Very.
I think we'll see that actually across the Android board in the next 24, actually probably less than that. I'll say 12 months. The next 12 months, we're going to see a lot of Face ID, true Face ID alternatives. We've seen plenty of things that are half done for years. And obviously, Google or Apple was not the very first to do face recognition on a smartphone. Because, you know, Google Smart Lock's been doing it via the camera for years. Interestingly removed that with the Pixel 3.
Yeah, I missed that feature greatly. I used that.
I wonder why they removed that.
Safety, probably.
They don't want people thinking that it's really a valid alternative to Face ID. I don't know. OnePlus's facial security on the 6T is pretty bad. It's basically no better than photo based. We've seen iris scanners on the Galaxy phones, which are a fad that came and went.
Oh, I forgot about that. Iris scanning.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think this year we're going to see that happen. I think that we're going to see a lot of notches actually have a purpose on the Android side of things, finally.
Yes, finally.
Yeah. Oh, and then Google Plus is shutting down. And I guess that's going to be a 2019 story as well, because it hasn't shut down yet. But that was another big story of the year, because that, you know, yeah, it was inevitable. And it had it coming for years. But
it did not die gracefully. Let's put it that way. It's not dying gracefully.
Died in the midst of controversy.
Wild controversy. Yeah.
So, speaking of trends going into 2019, what else do you think that we're going to see real quick before we move on to CES? Because we need to move on.
So, obviously, we're going to see more about RCS as US carriers especially start adopting it, putting it on more devices. We're going to see how well Google's vision of messaging is going to actually play out. I guess we'll definitely see it in the US, but I think more interesting is how this plays out in the rest of the world. And whether Google has the right idea of making it carrier-based versus web-based. And we will really see how that pans out. I'm sure we have our own thoughts about whether or not that'll work, but it's going to be exciting.
Yeah, I think before the end of the year, we'll know whether or not RCS worked out. I really do think this will be the year, finally.
Finally.
Because we're seeing, I mean, even Verizon this month launched RCS on the Pixel 3. And yeah, it's working.
Is it iOS 13, though?
Definitely not. Definitely not. It'll be 15, 17, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, this will be the year of RCS, but I don't think Apple's going to touch it for years.
Ooh,
I really don't. I think it'll be a year or two or more.
Okay. iOS 15 sounds about right, honestly, to me.
Yeah. I think it'll be, I think it'll be in a couple years, Apple will be like, the attitude will be like, we didn't need this. You don't need this because you're an iPhone user. You've had iMessage for years, but we have to keep up with the times. That'll be the message.
It'll be a tiny word in that word bubble.
Exactly.
Bubble.
Yeah, totally. It'll be the smallest one on the slide of features coming with the new iOS in gray font in the graphic.
Okay. So tie it back to Google Lens. I think augmented reality is going to happen. in that, in terms of maybe people will find it more useful on their phones, maybe
turn by turn walking directions.
I want that fox so badly, that tiny animated fox telling me where to go in the world. I cannot wait for that.
We've been saying augmented reality is going to be a trend for like 3 years now.
Okay, addendum to that, specifically augmented reality hardware. I've been pessimistic about how long it'll take to get up and running when the miniaturization, when the actual hard technology problems get solved. But with what we're seeing with companies like North and like Intel Vant before it was killed, I think it's happening sooner than later. I don't think it'll be too like overlaying stuff over your vision. But I think that what the first taste are going to get is just notifications being displayed on glasses. And I think that's going to be a first good taste of like what this can do. And maybe 2 years out, maybe, of when that's actual gets into consumer products. But I think...
I thought we were talking about 2019 trends.
I'm being generous. I'm talking about what's exciting to me personally. But that's fair. But again... Yeah. A continuation of phone-based augmented reality, and maybe we're going to start seeing more niche hardware players get in. And by the end of 2019, we'll be getting that blog post from the Wall Street Journal that says Apple and Google looking into augmented reality hardware the next year. So,
yeah, I think we're getting to that point. I think, amazingly enough, I think the biggest driver, I think the biggest motivator and biggest driver for AR's push into the mainstream will be, as we were talking about at the top of the show, money people and Apple stock. I think that will be the number one influencer in pushing AR into the masses, because I think Apple needs a post iPhone hardware device, or they need something to supplement the iPhone, or at least, I don't know, to kind of, I don't know. Obviously, the iPhone's flatlining. We know that. I mean, Apple's no longer going to be reporting iPhone, unit sales and stuff. And it's like smartphones as a whole have peaked. And I think, you know, of all companies, I think Apple is feeling that pressure more than most. Yeah. I don't think, you know, for instance, smartphones peaking is not putting crazy amount of pressure on Google's stock price, because Google's primary revenue driver is not hardware, smartphone hardware. Apple's primary revenue driver is smartphone hardware. And if smartphones are flatlining, then Apple needs to come up with something that will sell, and something that will kind of serve as a supplement, another Apple Watch. Actually, I think the Apple Watch model has worked for Apple, and I think that we might see them replicate the Apple Watch model with a smart display AR device.
And I would add that if Apple starts getting into augmented reality, Google is going to get there via way of getting their applications and web app and whatnot on Apple's new platform, because that is the trend.
For sure. But also, we know Google has a little bit of a head start with AR in general. Actually, a lot of a head start. I don't know how that... We don't know how the development of AR devices has played out in the VR AR department.
Yeah,
the daydream department at Google. We don't know how the development of AR has been going for the last few years. It's of all things, it seems like they've been able to keep that under wraps.
Yeah,
which is fascinating. But you know, that's something we just don't know. Has AR development stalled over the last few years, ever since Google Glass was kind of shuttered at Google? I don't think so. I just think that they've managed to keep it mostly secret.
We've definitely seen the software side of this with AR Core and before that Tango.
For sure. And I think Daydream too is kind of, even though it's VR right now, I think that the development of Daydream is going to be...
Yeah.
That work will be used for AR.
For example, the Lenovo Mirage Solo standalone Daydream thing, it just got a pass. It's soon to get a pass-through mode for developers, and that is 100% going to be a development platform going forward.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, that's a big trend. All right. We got about 15 minutes. We can talk a little bit about CES this upcoming. Well, actually, before we talk about CES, let's close with CES. Let's talk about Pixel 3 Lite, which is kind of the biggest story of this week. Comes via our good friend David Ruddock over at Android Police. He reported that the Pixel 3 and Pixel 3 XL Lite, Pixel 3 Lite, these devices that we've been seeing leaked via some of the same Russian publications that leaked the Pixel 3 and Pixel 3 XL, and it's in full, very widely last fall. They've been leaking these Pixel 3 Lites, which are, you know, lower powered, Snapdragon 670 or 710, we're not sure, 4 gigs of RAM, 32 gigs of storage, IPS LCD displays, and they all have headphone jacks. So it sounds like a lot of the same kind of things we see on mid-range Android phones.
Yep.
So David says, though, that these phones, which we speculated and we expected would be India. Likely to be India only or developing nations or, you know, second world countries or whatever you want to call it. We expected that these phones would probably not be US bound, basically. David's report is telling us otherwise, that not only will they be US bound, but Verizon will be launching them. Sometime in the spring is the timeline that he gave via his report. Sounds like a Verizon source.
What's wild for us is that we're going to made by Google is doing this a second hardware event in the year. That is a breaking precedent, to say the least. And that should drive another whole cycle of hardware.
Yeah, it's exciting for us, for those of us that write about the news and know the hype that surrounds these hardware, Google hardware products. It's exciting for us to know that we get to spend a month or two hitting these new phones hard and reviewing them and everything else. I mean, I didn't expect that these would actually be available in the United States. What do you think the gameplay? The game plan is here? What are they trying to do?
It
doesn't make sense to me at all.
No, it doesn't. Personally. It honestly seems like a contractual obligation with Verizon, because the Pixel 3s are being discounted like crazy. Like, it's not hard to get a good deal on that phone. And to bring it even lower, what is the selling point of it? Is it the camera? If the camera is just as good as the one on the main phone, and you know that there are people who are discontent with buying expensive phones, what's stopping people from just buying the cheap one?
And
really, the story that Google has to tell on these phones is really fascinating once you factor in the US. Like, they have a clear narrative if they just are limited to developing countries where they need to get cheaper phones, where they need sell more of those. But once you're entering this US market, who are you addressing? Who are you targeting? Is this going to be some kind of crazy prepaid phone? I doubt it, but Verizon is selling it.
I don't know. It's hard because, like, I feel like the fact that Google's, their computational photography is so far ahead is one of the things that makes the high price tag on the Pixel 3 not crazy.
Yes.
It's like, it's one of the things that, both from a marketing standpoint and just from comparing spec to spec and feature to feature with other phones, that's one of the things that makes it, I feel like, for me, if I were to be buying these, which, I mean, I have two of them that Google sent me, so I don't have to buy them. at least not right now. Not yet. But you know, if I did, for me, the fact that the computational photography is so far ahead would be one of the things that would make it easier to swallow that big price tag. And so the idea that they might just launch the exact same camera with the exact same, you know, photography prowess on the cheaper phone, which, do we know anything about the phone, the camera sensors?
We've seen sample images and they looked fine.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen sample images and but we don't really know the specs of the cameras yet. No. We just know they're 12 megapixel rear and 8 megapixel front. So we don't really know. But to me, it seems like Google would be shooting themselves in the foot to sell these at a $400 price point or whatever they decide to do. Because I feel like the camera is their biggest selling point. It's one of the things that makes justifying the iPhone-like price tag on,
yeah, you
know, possible.
And it's a good selling point. It's like justified.
Right, for sure. I don't know.
Oh, that's a bit confusing.
Yeah, I just don't know. And it also worries me to see that Google is already kind of diluting their lineup a little bit.
Yeah, they have a very good simple message going with them right now.
Yeah.
And honestly, selling cheap phones at the premium, if you take Apple, for example, Apple totally failed with the 5C first time round.
So, also, should we expect to see the same level of software support from these as we would the...
Oh, they have to.
Top end?
If it's called the Pixel, they absolutely have to. That they'll be ridiculed if they start putting devices, their Pixel devices, in tiers.
Yeah, but at the same time, this tier of devices is notorious for being terrible with software support and updates, yeah. And it's not exactly something that people buying this price device really care about.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It worries me that this will be I don't really have a problem with a cheaper phone. What I have a problem with is Google kind of allowing the Pixel brand to be tarnished. If this phone isn't good, right? Like,
yeah,
it's kind of like,
design. Let's just look at the leaks. Design wise, it's a mismatch. It's a mismatch of everything they've already announced, and it doesn't look too inspiring. The colors are nice.
Yeah, I feel like Google's really tried with the marketing, with everything, to try and pitch the Pixel phones as iPhone level premium devices, and launching Pixel Lite or whatever it is they call it seems like they're, I don't know, it kind of seems like admitting defeat to some degree.
Going against their partners. We'll see.
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how this pans out and see if there are any more leaks over the next couple of months to really get a better idea of what these phones are and how they'll be positioned. And anyways, in positive news with hardware, Google announced, or not announced, but what firm was this? RBC Capital Markets. They said that made by Google's hardware. So Google's hardware division profited an estimated $3 billion for 2018. And so it seems like the Pixel, even though it's growing slowly, is growing.
Yes. Which is
probably thanks to ridiculous marketing muscle that they've been put behind these things.
Yeah. The ads work. They're catchy.
Yeah. I mean, they're everywhere. You can't escape it. Maybe I just noticed them because I write about Google all the time, but it just seems like they're everywhere. I'm excited to see it at CES this year if we have another Make Google Do It or Made by Google what you call it?
Branding campaign. What's the new tagline?
The monorail. Yeah.
The monorail.
Yeah. So Make Google Do It was debuted at South By at the Funhouse or whatever. That's where that branding first appeared, I think. And then I think CES. At CES last year on the monorail, what did it say? It wasn't Make Google Do It. It was something I forgot. I think it was just Hey Google. I think it was just the words Hey Google. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry for activating all your devices. But anyways, that kind of is a perfect segue into our final topic of the day, which is CES happening next week. Ben Schoen, who you probably know from 9to5 Google, will be joining me and a handful of other members of the 9to5 network in Las Vegas for my fifth year of CES. Fourth, I can't remember. But yeah, I'm dreading it. I'm not looking forward to it at all, if I'm completely honest.
Just stay in the Google booth. You can do that. It'll be big enough.
Honestly, that's like ever since last year. Yeah, exactly. It's been the redeeming quality for for CES is that Google now has a presence there, where, you know, they had presence before, but it wasn't Google itself. So I'm excited to document everything that Google does with, you know, its first party stuff. But otherwise, CES is a pretty big event for partners mostly. And I, you know, partners are great. It's just not my personal preference covering all these third party Google Assistant speakers and new Wear OS watches from Fossil and whatever other OEMs. And we're going to see probably new smart displays. We're not really sure what we're going to see. Actually, last year Google announced the Android Things platform or the smart display based on Android Things platform.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see if maybe there's another surprise this year, because last year we had no clue. It came out of left field. We had no idea that Google was going to do that. I mean, except for rumors that Google is working on its own smart display, we didn't know that Google is going to beat itself to the punch by 8 months or nine months and announce that platform. So I don't know. We'll see. We don't really know what to expect, really. We've heard that Samsung may deliver Google Assistant on its 2019 smart TVs. TiVo may debut an Android TV device soon. Android TV is another platform that has been big at CES for the last few years.
Quietly popular.
Yeah.
Many are adopting it. As it's in that Android way of people, manufacturers just needing an OS, they're flocking to Android TV, and it's working for Google.
Yeah, another thing has been these Android TV soundbars. It's kind of a trend. We saw the first one at Google I/O this past year, and there's a rumor that LG already did unveil new high-end soundbars with Google Assistant baked in, and they'll be showcased at CES 2019 as well. So we'll be on the ground to check out everything there is to see. Personally, most excited for that Google booth, which is bigger than last year, and last year's was huge. So. Even though there probably won't be any new products, it'll be.
I look forward to a live blog of you in the line for the claw machine.
Yes, that will be what I'm doing. Honestly, that's probably the thing I will be most interested in. For those that don't understand the inside joke, there was a Google claw machine at South by Southwest,
all over Vegas as well.
Oh yeah, yeah. But the first one I experienced was the one at the Google Fiber space at South by 2016, I think.
Google Fiber.
If you remember that.
Something.
So, anyways, I think that pretty much rounds out the show. We will have CES next week. I wish it were next year. CES is next week. We will be in Las Vegas. Ben, Sean, and I. So I'm not sure what we're going to do for the podcast. Maybe we'll have me, Ben, and Abner all on for a show.
Live cast.
But we'll definitely have a show next Wednesday here, same place, same time, Wednesday afternoon. Until then, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every Wednesday and publish on Thursday mornings on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play. And you can also listen over at 9to5google.com. Thanks for tuning in, as always, and thanks to Abner for joining me, and we'll see you next week at CES.
Bye.